Thanks for joining us. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. At a town hall-style meeting yesterday in Raleigh, North Carolina, President Obama defended his administration's economic policies and said they had helped save the nation from a depression. Some economists are now saying the nation's long recession has either ended or is in its final stages. Joining me in the studio to discuss where we stand and where we're going, Dean Baker with the Center for Economic Policy and Research, and Douglas Holtz-Aiken, a former top economist in the George W. Bush administration. And joining us from his office in Westchester, Pennsylvania, is Mark Zandi of moodyseconomy.com. Welcome to all of you.
Thanks, Susan.
We're going to invite our listeners to join our conversation later in this hour. You can call our toll-free number 1-800-433-8850 or send us an email at drshow@wamu.org. Well, Mark Zandi, let's start with you. Lots of economic numbers and reports out this week. In your judgment, is the recession ending?
It's close. I think this long slide in the economy is coming to an end, and I think in the next few months we'll be in recovery. So, yeah, I think it's fair to think that the recession is just about over.
Oh, Douglas Holtz-Aiken, do you agree?
It'll be over August 17th at 4 o'clock. I think it tells us a lot that we are so pleased that the descent has slowed. I think the big picture here is that we're far from in good shape, but it's been so rough that even a modest decline, it looks really good.
Yeah. Dean Baker, what do you think?
Well, I think it's important people understand what the recession being over is. This is kind of something for nerds that, you know, we're going to look at the number and say GDP is growing. And my guess is, you know, the numbers for the third and certainly the fourth quarter probably will be above zero. But they'll be so little above zero that we're almost certainly not going to be creating jobs, and certainly not creating jobs fast enough so that the unemployment rate doesn't continue to rise. So for the whole country, they're going to feel like we're still in a recession. So Doug and Mark and I might celebrate the recession was over, and people are going to think we're nuts because the unemployment rate's going to keep rising. People will still lose homes at very rapid rates.
And one of the things to remember is that the official dating of these recessions is left to the National Bureau of Economic Research, and they will do this well after the fact, and they will look at a broad set of indicators, and employment has turned out to be a big part of their decision-making. So what I think we'll see is growth in the second half, a lot of people saying it's over, but as Dean said, not feeling like it's over.
And Mark Zandi, when we say the recession is over and there eventually will be a date when we can say this is when the recession ended, what does that mean exactly?
Yeah, I think it's September 15th, actually. and if you want to know the time of day, you have to buy my book. Well, what it means is that the value of all the things that we produce, GDP, stops declining, and that we start to get growth. Dean and Doug are right that we probably won't get enough growth in GDP to actually create jobs, a significant number of jobs, and certainly not enough jobs to lower unemployment. That probably won't happen until this time next year. So the economy is going to be out of recession. Economists are going to take solace in that, but it's not going to be enough to make us all feel really good about things until, I think, late 2010.
So you all agree that the technical definition of the recession is at its end or approaching its end. What could upset that? What could turn that around so that the generally kind of modestly hopeful feeling people now have about the economy doesn't happen? Dean, what do you think?
Well, I could think of two very plausible scenarios, and maybe they both will go together. One is that we were put here by the housing bubble, collapse of the housing bubble, but we have also a bubble in commercial real estate, which has just about doubled as a share of the GDP since 2004. So there's huge overcapacity in retail, office space, most areas of non-residential. That's likely to fall back. On top of that, we had a very big improvement in our trade deficit. That might seem hard for people to believe, but we had a very big improvement in the trade deficit, which contributed, well, let's put it this way, meant GDP was declining less rapidly than it otherwise would have. If we see a big deterioration in the trade deficit, trade situation next year, I could imagine a story where you have, in effect, very weak consumption growth, very weak investment, and then you couple it with negatives in non-residential real estate and trade, that could push us below zero into a double dip.
Doug, what makes you nervous?
The financial sector makes me nervous still. I mean, we are far from out of the woods with the distress we've seen in some of the big banks, and I think Dean's put his finger on one of the real potential downsides there, and that is the refinancing of these commercial mortgages. There's about $3 trillion of them that have to be refinanced over the next 15 months, the properties underneath those mortgages have declined in value by something like 30 to 40%. So that's just not going to happen. It's certainly not going to happen easily. And to the extent we see these big financial institutions hit hard by losses on commercial mortgages, households remain weak and credit card losses are going to be there. I get worried about further distress coming out of the financial sector.
Mark Zandi, what do you think?
I think all the things that Doug and Dean mentioned are legitimate concerns and risks. To me, though, the most significant risk is the foreclosure crisis. I mean, that continues on. And as long as foreclosures continue to mount, house prices will fall, and nothing works with falling house prices. That undermines household wealth and the willingness and ability of consumers to spend, and it's corrosive on the financial system. So, and of all the policy efforts the administration's put forward, they've all worked reasonably well, except for foreclosure mitigation. That has not gone well, and that needs to kick in to a more significant degree. Otherwise, that risk is going to rise.
Why has it been so hard to slow down this foreclosure crisis?
I think the big problem is that banks are not used to doing modifications. Banks and servicers, I mean, they're used to foreclosing, and we're asking them to do something that they really don't have a lot of experience in doing. There's potentially large losses there. I mean, the basic story is that you could sort of divide mortgage holders up into three types. One that isn't going to be able to do it no matter what. So you do the modification, they end up defaulting in 3 months, 6 months. That doesn't, obviously, the bank loses money on that modification. Another group, they're in a situation where they will pull through. You know, if the bank just stands tough, they don't want to lose those profits. So if they do a modification, they're getting less than they otherwise would have. The only one where it makes sense for the bank to do it is someone who's in the middle, and they're not necessarily going to be able to figure out in advance who's in the middle. So long and short, the simplest thing for the banks, the servicers to do in general, is simply go through with this process of foreclosure.
Doug, what do you think?
I have a slightly different answer, which is this spans two administrations. None of the things that either the Bush administration nor the Obama administration has tried has worked at all. And I think one reason is that none of them have been particularly aggressive and really far-reaching, because all of these foreclosure mitigation efforts are politically unpopular. If you actually go out and ask Americans, what do you think about helping Joe down the street with his mortgage? They hate the idea. And given the political realities, no administration goes after this forcefully. The servicers and the mortgage issuers, as Dean said, take a look at the landscape and say, geez, you know, there's no real backing if I go out and do this stuff. It's hard and complicated, and we muddle along.
Our phone lines are open. You can give us a call at 1-800-433-8850 or send us an email, drshow@wamu.org, or you can send us a tweet on Twitter. I'd like you each to assess how you think the Obama administration has handled this economic crisis. We heard President Obama yesterday strongly defending his administration's approach. Joe Biden on Sunday in the New York Times wrote an op-ed piece saying the administration had saved the country from a depression. What do you think, Dean? How would you rate the administration's actions on the economy over these last 6 months?
Well, I'd give them a mixed grade. I mean, I think the stimulus certainly was very positive. We have more jobs in the economy. State and local governments are making less cutbacks than they otherwise would have had we not had the stimulus. Now, I wish it had been probably two or three times as large, because the fact in there is we're going to see the unemployment rate cross 10%. Might well cross 11%, and as I think we'd all agree, we're likely going to sit there through most, if not all, of 2010, and we're likely to have an elevated unemployment rate into 2012, even 2013, by many estimates. So, to my mind, I would have liked to see much more stimulus. Also, just very quickly on the mortgage modification issue, I think we could go a different route. I've been pushing this idea of right to rent, that if we just said that when people are facing foreclosure, they have the right to stay in their house as renters, paying the market rent for a substantial period of time. I think this addresses the concern that Doug has, a legitimate concern. People don't want to pay someone else's mortgage. In this case, you're not paying their mortgage. You're just saying, look, this is a bad situation. You have a right to stay in your home for, let's say, 5 years, 7 years, as long as you pay the rent.
Yeah, but then the bank would own the home.
That's right. Yes. It's the bank's
yeah.
home.
What do you think about that, Doug?
Certainly, it's got to be considered an option. And one of the things you wonder about is why banks don't come to this conclusion on their own. I mean, foreclosure is a costly operation from the bank's point of view. And foreclosing on someone and then putting it on this market can't be very attractive. So it probably has a lot to do with their concern about having the expertise to be landlords. But that's solvable. And yeah. A little imagination is what's necessary here.
What do you think, Mark Zandi, about this idea of right to rent?
I think it's a good idea. Actually, Freddie Mac has implemented a program to try to see if this works, and I think early evidence suggests that it is a reasonably good idea. I think, though, implementing it on a big scale quickly is the problem, and of course the problem is here and now, and I'm not sure that's going to solve it. So I think ultimately, if the foreclosure crisis continues to mount, if the current modification, if the president's current modification plan doesn't work successfully, my suspicion is that policymakers are going to have to become more aggressive and try to subsidize modifications with principal write-down, reducing the amount of mortgage debt that these homeowners own so that they can stay in the home and try to get over this political problem that Doug correctly mentioned.
And Mark Zandi, how do you think the stimulus bill is working? A lot of controversy about it. Cost a lot of money, $787 billion. Some people say it's been very slow to show effect. Do you think it's doing what it was intended to do?
Well, let me more broadly say, Susan, I think the administration's policy efforts have been good. The most successful effort has been to shore up the banking system. The stress tests have been extraordinarily successful, and I think the system is on sound ground as a result of that. I also think the stimulus has been quite effective. It's early days. We need to see more evidence of this, but I don't think it's any accident that the economy is going from recession to recovery at the same time that the stimulus is providing its maximum economic benefit to the economy. So I think the stimulus has worked pretty well. Now, I agree with the dean that it probably should have been bigger up front, and I suspect that later this year, early next, policymakers will be thinking about what else they can do to help the economy. They won't be calling it stimulus, but some other help for the economy. But nonetheless, I think it was reasonably well designed in a reasonably good sized package.
Mark Zandi is chief economist and co-founder of MoodysEconomy.com, and he's the author of Financial Shock, a 360-degree look at the subprime mortgage implosion and how to avoid the next financial crisis, which is a mouthful. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we'll continue our conversation with Mark Zandi, Douglas Holtz Aiken, and Dean Baker. And we're going to take your calls and questions about the economy, where we stand now, and where we're going next. Stay with us. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. And we're talking about the state of the U.S. economy and some signs that the long recession we've been suffering under is about to end. With me in the studio, Dean Baker. He's co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research. He's the author of Plunder and Blunder, The Rise and Fall of the Bubble Economy. And Douglas Holtz Aiken. He was chief economist in President George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors and director of the Congressional Budget Office. And in 2008, he was a senior advisor to the John McCain presidential campaign. And joining us by phone, Mark Zandi of MoodysEconomy.com. We were talking before the break about the effect of the stimulus package and whether it had done what it promised to do. Douglas Holtz Aiken, what do you think?
Well, I'm a little less generous in my assessment of what's gone on so far. I do think the Obama administration deserves credit for stepping in at a time when the economy was really in terrible shape. And if you're put in the pilot seat when the plane is headed straight down, you get credit for pulling it out, period. And they deserve that. But to my mind, The execution of the financial stabilization could have been a lot stronger. They have, much like the Bush administration, wandered from idea to idea without giving a clear direction of what exactly is the end game. Are we ever going to take toxic assets off banks' balance sheets? You know, what are we trying to do? And on the stimulus, there's a lot in that bill that is permanent programs in the guise of stimulus that we don't need and indeed can't afford as a nation. I would have preferred to see a bill that was smaller in total but much more front-loaded. so that it hit the economy quicker.
What are the kinds of things you say should not have been included in this bill?
Well, I mean, if you look at the bill, you've got a lot of spending that's not going to occur until, you know, 2011, 2012. That's not about stimulus. That's about their policy objectives. Health information technology is not stimulus. Broadband is not stimulus. You can go down there and look at these programs that they've set up. If those are policy initiatives that they think have merit, then they should be done in the regular order, and we should offset spending elsewhere to afford them. We are not in a position where we can simply spend and spend and spend as a nation.
So Mark Zandi says the stimulus should have been bigger. You say it should have been smaller. Dean Baker, where do you come down?
I think definitely it should have been much, much bigger. Again, we wouldn't be sitting here looking at 10%, 11% unemployment through most of 2010 if we're big enough. I mean, that's really an outrage. I mean, that's tens of millions of people that are without work or working less part-time hours when they'd like to have full-time hours. That's just an incredible waste, incredible amount of suffering that's absolutely pointless. And with the bigger stimulus, we could have combated that.
I think the reason, you know, I mean, you have to pick out what is the diagnosis of the problem. And I think that the really key thing is the setting for this downturn is one in which households had become increasingly indebted. And in the downturn, they had lost housing wealth. They have lost portfolio wealth. There is nothing that the government's fiscal policy instruments can do that will replace that lost wealth. Indeed, we are simply going to see households trying to rebuild their wealth. They're going to come out of this recession spending slowly. We need to turn elsewhere. The Fed is one place, and they have done an enormous amount. But we need to look at the sustainable kinds of spending, business spending, net exports. That's going to be the key to success. We are no longer going to be a nation that is the last retail market on the planet. We have to look to other kinds of drivers for near-term growth, and that's what stimulus should be about.
Well, Doug, I very much agree that we have to change the orientation of our economy. And, of course, I was just jumping up and down yelling about that all through the last decade. But in terms of where we go forward, let me give you something very concrete. Suppose we had a tax credit to get employers, let's say a $3,000 per worker tax credit to get employers to shorten work weeks, shorten work years, paid vacation time, paid time off, paid sick leave, whatever it might be. That would be a way to, in effect, redistribute employment so that given the same levels of output, we can get somewhere back close to full employment fairly quickly.
Well, I mean, it's a way of, at great expense, disguising the fact that you're not at full employment. And so I think a better approach would be to recognize that you're going to have a situation where you need other drivers for final demand. And let's be serious about supporting those who are unemployed. We're going to need extensions of unemployment insurance. We're going to have other things we have to take care of. But we are not going to fool Mother Nature here. We have a long period of household wealth rebuilding, and we have a government that entered this recession in an unprecedented state of fiscal distress, and it is much, much worse. And for us to ignore that in our policymaking decisions, it would be a tremendous error.
There's nothing that hurts people more in their daily lives than unemployment. We heard Dean Baker predict 10%, 11% unemployment all through next year. Mark Zandi, what do you think will happen with the unemployment rate looking ahead the next year or two?
It will rise. We're at 9.5% today, and I think by next spring, summer, when it peaks, it'll probably be closer to 10.5%. And Dean is right, it's going to take a while to get that unemployment rate down. I don't think businesses are going to be hiring aggressively, certainly not in 2010. And so we are in store for a long period of unemployment at levels that we're going to be uncomfortable with. It really won't be until 2013, perhaps even 2014, before we're back to what economists call full employment. That would be an unemployment rate that's closer to 5.5% or 6%.
When was the last time we had such an extended period of double-digit, or expectation of double-digit unemployment?
Well, we never did. We had a period where we briefly got into double-digit unemployment back in the 81-82 recession, but the economy actually recovered very quickly in 83. It bounced back. We had very rapid growth, and the unemployment rate, if I remember right, fell 2.5 percentage points over the course of that year. And I don't see anyone, any story where we could envision the unemployment rate falling 2.5 percentage points in 2010 or even 2011.
So does everyone on the panel expect this to be the worst employment situation we've had since the Great Depression?
I think that's a fair concern,
yeah.
Absolutely. But the real issue is, can we avoid, in setting up policies, going back to the kinds of problems we had in the 70s in particular, where repeated efforts to manage the unemployment rate and repeated efforts to intervene in the economy left us with the worst of both worlds, which was higher inflation and chronic high unemployment, not double digit, but no expectation that would go down to something like 5%.
Let's go to the phones and take some callers. Sheila's calling us from Eugene, Oregon. Sheila, hi, you're on the air.
Thank you. I didn't expect to be first. Yeah, I have two questions. One is, of all the hundreds of billions of dollars that have been given to these incompetent companies who have run things down to the ground, how, if we broke that down to per person in the country, how much would that be for each person? And the second is, I don't understand how you can say a recession is ending and why any company should start manufacturing when there's probably about actually 13-15% actual unemployed people who cannot shop, who cannot support these businesses. Why would they start manufacturing if people aren't shopping because they don't have jobs?
And Sheila, your question about the companies that have run themselves into the ground, what are you thinking about, automakers or banks, or who are you thinking about there?
At these corporations, these companies, these heads of companies, who have become so greedy that they'll do anything to make their buck, and they're not even controlled as to how much they earn right now, and we're giving them money, and I think it's these people who are doing these things, and I don't see any reason why the money that they're being given should cause the recession to end. There's nothing that's still supporting the recession.
All right, Sheila, thanks so much for your call.
If I could take the first part of that one, this gets back to Doug's comment. I very much agree that the Obama administration's policies toward dealing with the financial crisis have been very inconsistent, and much of the money, I think, has not been well spent. We don't have a clear path forward. I think we did have a disaster situation, certainly back in September. It was good we did something. I wish we had put some better conditions on that in terms of how you deal with the toxic assets that the banks have. That's a tough one. I think my view is that if you take them off the bank's books, you have to put very tight conditions. Like, among other things, you're not going to be paying your executives tens of millions of dollars in bonuses. And the Obama administration, I think, has been all over the place on this. On certain days of the week, they want to take, they're the tough guys. Then the next day of the week, the money goes out the door.
Doug, what do you think?
Well, I think that the troubling part for Americans is that we put about, it's roughly $2,000 a person, a little bit more into
I'm very impressed you have a number there for this question.
Well, she asked the question, so I tried to do the math.
You had a date for the recession ending, too. So.
I'm very numerate. I have no personality, but. But, you know, if we put this money on the table and you ask, geez, is it worth it? Because $2,000 is a lot of money. Think what I could do with that. And the answer is, you know, you sort of have to, because if you put the $2,000 in everyone's pocket and they go out and try to spend it and you've got a financial system that is like a clog in the arteries, it just doesn't pull the economy out. So it was probably the episode that will trouble everyone involved the most over the longest period. It was necessary. It's never going to be viewed as pretty, and it remains problematic in its execution.
Susan, can I make a point here? I mean, I think it was very distasteful, all the money that had to be provided to the financial system to shore it up. No one really wanted to do it, but it's not like we're not getting our money back. Much of that was taken in preferred shares and other loans, and most of that money will come back. In fact, a lot of the money has come back already from a lot of the major banks, and as taxpayers, we've made a return on that money. So at the end of the day, I think it was an investment we had to make and was very much necessary. If we didn't do it, we'd be in measurably worse shape. And I have a much more charitable view on the administration's response to the financial crisis. I just think back 6 months ago as to what was happening. We were losing one blue-chip financial institution every single week, and the system now is on very sound ground. It's doing measurably better, and I think it's heading in the right direction.
If I could just very quickly comment on that, I don't think the choice was whether you do something or do nothing. The question to my mind was whether you did something with conditions or without conditions. I would say to a very large extent we did this without conditions. We still let the CEOs get very large paychecks. The shareholders got rewarded way more than they should have. The bondholders got rewarded way more than they should have. To my mind, those were the key issues.
Are the bailouts over now? Where we spent what we're going to spend in propping up companies and banks and automakers? Or should Americans be braced for this to be something that could come around again?
I don't see any appetite in Congress for more money for financial bailouts. And so I think what you will see, And what has actually driven a lot of the administration's policy design is the fact that this is the money. And so figure out what you're going to do with it. And as Mark said, some of it will come back and ultimately, you know, be there to retire other obligations in the Treasury. The place I think you might see more money is GM and Chrysler. I mean, these problems are not over, and I don't think the U.S. taxpayer should be in there at all, but they are. And getting out of that is going to be more difficult.
How about a second stimulus package, Mark Zandi? Number one, do you think that's called for? Should we be prepared for that? Number two, is that going to be a tough political sale too?
You know, I think it's premature to know. I think we have to wait towards the end of the year and see how the recovery is going and whether we feel comfortable that it's going to get engaged and we're going to be in a self-sustaining economic expansion in 2010-2011. My suspicion is that the economy probably could use more help in 2011. I don't think we'll call it stimulus. No one has an appetite for another stimulus package. But, you know, it is an election year. Policymakers are going to be looking towards November, and they do know that the current stimulus package, the benefits of that package will start to fade and actually turn negative by late 2010. So I think the policymakers could do some things to help, and it would be things like giving more aid to state governments whose fiscal year 2011 budgets are going to be even, at least as bad as 2010, helping unemployed workers because, as we've just discussed, many are going to be running out of benefits because of the length of unemployment. And also, we have legislative tax increases for early 2011. That feels premature to me. Perhaps policymakers might phase that in or delay it so that it doesn't cause a problem in 2011. So things like that, I think, will be part of the budget. But I doubt we'll get something we'll call stimulus. I think we don't have an appetite for that.
I'm Susan Page of USA Today, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. If you'd like to call us, call 1-800-433-8850. Send an email to drshow@wamu.org. Find us on Facebook or send us a tweet. Let's go back to the phones. We'll talk to Jane. She's calling us from Baltimore, Maryland. Jane, thanks so much for joining us.
Hi, how are you? Thank you for taking my call.
Yes.
I'm calling in regards to some of the comments made by your guests regarding mortgage modification. And I think the important thing to think about is there's no mandate federally that all of the mortgage holders who are getting stimulus money actually do the bailouts and do the help and the modification for people like me who've lost their job. Here's my experience, which is I lost $120,000 base salary in March. Very diligently, I immediately applied for mortgage modification with my lender. And, of course, I'm handled by my servicer, not the lender. I applied, went through all the rigmarole, handled the paperwork, to make a long story short, went through the process and became a part of the modification system. Constantly called back, was told every 4 or 5 weeks it was in another place, it was handed to the negotiator was working on the terms, it would be 12 weeks, so I hear. Needless to say, when I called at the end of this period of time, which was 15 weeks after I had applied and been told I was in the process, I reached somebody at the modification position with my loan servicer and was told I wouldn't be getting a modification because my lender does not do modifications. This is 15 weeks after processing. I said, what do you mean? My lender doesn't. They said, well, you're not Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. You don't have to. I said, well, who's my lender? They said, I'm not going to tell you. We can't tell you.
Huh.
So the issue is that the people that are servicing loans, and it's National City Mortgage who is servicing my loan, is refusing to divulge who actually owns my loan. So I can't even make them accountable for modifying when I perfectly qualify under a mortgage, under a salary deduction and a lack of income deduction.
Well, that just seems strange. Do you have a right? Let me ask the panel. Do you have a right to know who's holding your mortgage?
I'm actually not sure of that.
Do you know, Doug?
I don't know. I think you ought to be able to find out, but because if they sell your mortgage, you are informed of it being sold. So the information's got to be out there. It sounds like the bank itself was distressed and taken over, if I recall, and so the service was not in a position to reveal something about the underlying bank. I don't know. I'm just guessing.
Well, Mark Zandi, how common are stories like Jane's where she's trying to do the right thing? She lost her job. She's trying to keep her home. She wants to work with her lender. How common is it, this experience where she's getting very frustrated, obviously, about trying to work things out?
No, what's happening coast to coast, this is all across America. I mean, this goes to the risk that I mentioned earlier as being the most significant risk to our economy. That's the foreclosure crisis. It's just a complete, utter fiasco and mess. And a lot of it goes to the fact that the system was designed for an environment of rising housing values. No one anticipated price declines, at least not on this scale, across the country. It just wasn't built into the system, and so we're just not prepared for it. Now, servicers and mortgage owners are trying to ramp up, and hopefully they will start to do more modifications under the president's HAMP plan. The administration is putting pressure on mortgage servicers. They just had a meeting, I believe, yesterday or the day, day before with the biggest servicers to try to get them to try to invest more in their servicing departments and to do more modifications. So I'm hopeful, but, you know, it is a mess. And I think at the end of the day, it may call for more of a policy effort. Policymakers may have to do more, provide more subsidies, and put more put pressure on servicers and owners to do the right thing and modify these loans.
Does anybody have an idea for an option, a place that Jane could go to try to seek some help? I realize we're not actually a group of housing advisors here. But
what I would do is I would call the Center for Responsible Lending.
Exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, I mean, it's a really good group, and they are really clued in with all the the consumer lending advocates and counseling agencies that could really help her. And I would also contact her congressman and say, you know, who should I talk to at HUD or somewhere else in the FHA.
Yeah. All right. Well, Jane, good luck. We hope things work out for you. We're going to take another very short break. When we come back, we'll talk about what the Beige Book report showed yesterday. Stay with us.
National broadcast of The Diane Rehm Show is made possible in part by the Ford Foundation, a resource for innovative people and institutions worldwide, on the web at fordfound.org. By the William T. Grant Foundation, supporting research to improve the lives of young people, online at wtgrantfoundation.org. And by the Doris Duke Charitable Foundation, supporting the performing arts, environmental conservation, medical research, and the prevention of child abuse. This is NPR, National Public Radio.
The gang known as MS-13 operates in at least 42 states in the District of Columbia. The FBI estimates there are 6,000 to 10,000 members nationwide. The rise and reach of one of the most violent gangs in America. The Diane Rehm Show, next hour. Welcome back. I'm Susan Page with USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. We have Mark Zandi of Moody'sEconomy.com on the phone, and with me in the studio, Douglas Holtz-Aiken and Dean Baker. Dean Baker is co-director of the Center for Economic and Policy Research, and Douglas Holtz-Aiken was chief economist for George W. Bush's Council of Economic Advisors early in his administration. Well, we had a U.S. Federal Reserve survey released yesterday called the Beige Book. What is the Beige Book, and what did it show? Doug?
The Beige Book is a regular effort by the Federal Reserve. They go out and they go to the regional Federal Reserve banks. There are districts all across the United States, and each one of those district banks essentially walks around the business environment in their region, and they look at the retail sales, they check out what the labor market looks like, are you able to raise prices or not, do you have any ability to make more money, And then they write back a summary of the outlook in their area. And the Beige Book is a compilation of the regional Federal Reserve's outlooks plus a summary for the country as a whole. And when the Beige Book came out yesterday, basically the message was, you know, there's a lot of weakness out there. The labor markets in particular are extremely weak, but we see a moderation in the decline. And this it fits the tale we've been hearing about, little green shoots in the economy and perhaps some hope for the future.
Dean Baker, what did you make of the Beige Book report? Did you find it very encouraging? Did you see some warning signs in it?
Well, I think Doug sort of captured it, that it's we aren't falling as fast as we were. I mean, the economy was really in a free fall in the fourth quarter and the first quarter of this year, and it seems to be leveling off. And again, I just have to remind, I think everyone, you know, we're all aware of this, but that's leveling off at a very low level. So we're looking at a situation no one's really looking to hire. Wage growth is non-existent. It's a very, very weak economy. The best we could say is it doesn't look like it's getting weaker, or at least certainly not as rapidly as it was earlier in the year.
John in D.C. has sent us an email that asks, do you think the economy will recover uniformly throughout the country, and what regional economies will recover the quickest? Mark Zandi, what are your thoughts on that?
It will vary quite a bit. I mean, one of the hallmarks of this downturn, though, is that it's hit every corner of the country. There are 386 metropolitan areas across the country. Only a dozen of them have avoided this recession, and that's unprecedented. But the recovery will vary quite a bit. I think parts of the country that have healthcare, educational services, high technology, that didn't participate as significantly in the housing boom and thus are not getting creamed by the housing bust, those are the markets that will improve.
And so what are some examples of those kinds of markets?
That would be like a Boston, a Philadelphia, a Raleigh, Durham, North Carolina, Orange County, California, Austin, Texas, those kind of economies. Those economies that have a heavy reliance on the housing market, on migration flows, that are getting creamed by the housing bust, they'll take longer. So Florida will be one of the last economies, for example, to recover. The Central Valley of California, tourism travel also will be very depressed for quite some time. So Vegas and Phoenix also will take a while to recover.
Do we think, or do you all think, that this long recession that we've been in is going to have some long-term impact on how people live their lives and handle their own family finances, make decisions that affect their personal the way they live their own lives, Dean Baker?
Well, I hope so. I mean, there was a lot of kind of nonsense that was being said through the 90s into the, you know, I talk about the bubble economy. So you had people saying through the 90s stock prices could keep going up. And then when they realized stock prices don't always go up, they said, well, housing's always safe. And, you know, there's this cult of homeownership. And, you know, we've always had this idea it's good to be a homeowner. In a lot of ways, there's advantages to it. But this idea that somehow that's always going to be the best thing, that this is a safe investment, that's simply not true. And hopefully people will be more educated about that and approach homeownership with open eyes.
Well, are we going to see fewer than a lower proportion of Americans who will be homeowners and can aspire realistically to own their own home, Doug?
Well, I think one of the remarkable things in this bubble was the rapid rise in homeownership. I mean, the homeownership rate in the United States has drifted up since the 1950s, but drift is the right word. It's very difficult to move it by 1 or 2 percentage points. And in a very short time, we saw it move 4 percentage points. And it's like, how did this happen? Well, now we know it wasn't on real solid foundation. And so I would expect, it, as it already has, to retreat some, retreat a bit more. But most importantly, I think what we've already seen happen is the U.S. saving rate has gone from 0 to something like 5%. I think there is no reason why you wouldn't expect it to drift even higher, given that a big fraction of the population is baby boomers who would like to get things in order before they retire. And we will, I believe, see a very different dynamic in the American household where saving is part of the regular planning of the household.
Well, Mark,
can I throw my 3 cents in?
Please,
there?
Go ahead.
I, in fact, think this financial crisis, a great recession, is an inflection point for the American household. I mean, for 25 years, U.S. consumers have powered the U.S. economy and, frankly, the entire global economy, and that's because they did lower their saving rate, and lower middle-income households did that by increasing their borrowing. Higher-income households did that because they thought they were wealthy and they didn't have to save. Well, this crisis turns all that on its head. Lower- and middle-income households are not going to be able to borrow. They're going to have to repay debt. And wealthier households now realize that they just don't have the savings they need to pay for their retirement. So going forward, I think U.S. consumers, they can do their part and they can spend quickly enough to allow the economy to grow. But they're not going to lead the way. We're going to need to see growth come from other parts of the world, hopefully from emerging economies.
And is this a good thing that Americans are going to be saving more?
Yes.
Absolutely. But one more thing I'd just say on the low savings rate, that was actually the perfectly rational, reasonable response to a housing bubble. So everyone was telling you that your house had doubled in price and you could expect it to just keep going up. It's a perfectly reasonable thing. You have another $100,000 equity in your home. Why not use some of that to get a car, take a vacation, whatever? It's a perfectly rational thing. So people weren't just being spendthrifts. If that money were real, they were acting in a perfectly reasonable way.
Well, but it didn't work out quite the way they thought.
It wasn't real. Yeah. That was the problem.
Here's an email from Steve in Dallas who says, since risky mortgage practices were at the root of this current recession, can you talk about any measures that have been discussed or taken to limit these kinds of actions in the future? I mean, could we see a return to some of the practices that have caused so many of the problems we've had today?
We know already that in the aftermath of the subprime crisis, the Federal Reserve and most of the regulators issued new guidance for what are appropriate standards for a mortgage. It was a bit late. You know, the problem had already happened. But that should be one part of precluding a recurrence of this. The second would be the behavior of households themselves. As Dean said, I think there's an entire generation out there who's going to look at a house with a little bit of a wary eye as an investment vehicle. And you know, still on the table in Congress are broader financial regulatory reforms, which presumably would include oversight of mortgage origination.
All right. Let's go back to the phones and talk to David. He's calling us from Charlotte, North Carolina. David, thanks for joining us.
Hey, good morning. One of your guests stated earlier that he's already seeing signs of recovery. And yet we've heard on the news repeatedly that only 10% of the stimulus money has been spent. So why is he calling for three times as much stimulus if we're already recovering with 10% of the current stimulus amount? Why don't we call it game, set, match? We're done at 10%. The economy goes in cycles. A boom cycle is always followed by a down cycle. And a down cycle, conversely, is followed by a boom. So are we just seeing the economy naturally start to come back? And is all this government tinkering more interference, tinkering, and experimentation?
All right, David, thank you so much for your call.
Well, I think I was the guilty party here. There's been a lot of confusion back and forth about the stimulus. I think it's actually around 15 has been spent, 15%. But to my mind, what's important is the rate at which it's being spent. And the point here, imagine that instead of a two-year stimulus, Doug's right, some of it's spent a little after 2 years, but most of it will be spent in the first 2 years. Suppose it were a 10-year stimulus. Well, we would then say we've just spent 1.5% of it. Well, what matters is the rate at which it's being spent. And imagine you got a $500 a month raise and you're expecting to earn $500 a month more for the next decade. Well, you're going to, after a month or 2 months, you'll be spending more based on your $500 monthly pay increase. And you're not going to increase the amount you spend a year from now because you're still getting that same $500. So my view is that we've probably seen most of the uptick from the stimulus. We'll see a bit more as some more of these projects come online. But we've already felt most of the uptick. So we're not going to be spending more in September, October, November than we did in May or June because of the tax cuts. We're already getting that.
Mark Zandi, what do you think about David's point that if that there's a natural business cycle and maybe that's just what we're seeing happen now at comeback?
I don't think this was your normal – this wasn't your father's or your grandfather's business cycle. This was something outside anything we've experienced since the Depression. And it goes back to the severity of the financial shock and the complete panic that we all felt as consumers, business people, and investors back late last year, early this. And, normally I would agree. I don't think government should tinker. I don't think stimulus makes good policy. It's not really the best thing to do in your typical recession. It comes too late and it's ineffective. But this is a very different kind of environment, and I think it was very important to be incredibly aggressive. And frankly, I think it worked reasonably well.
You know, one of the interesting things in reading about this recovery is the different kinds of recovery that we might be looking for, a W-shaped recovery, a V-shaped recovery, a U-shaped recovery. Doug, talk to us about what a W recovery would look like.
A W recovery would be one where we right now declare victory. We see the economy start to bounce up, and then suddenly we get this other shoe dropping we've worried about, whether it be a commercial real estate or some other manifestation of the foreclosure crisis, and down we go again, ultimately to recover. So that's one where you get sort of a false recovery in the middle.
So that'd be like a double dip recession.
That'd be a double dip recession, mm-hmm. And you know that remains a concern for many people.
Hey, Mark Zandi, what about a V-shaped recovery? What would that look like?
Well, it means that we're going to see a lot stronger growth pretty soon. These are the optimists. They think we suffered a very, very severe recession downturn, and therefore it's setting the stage for a very, very significant upturn in economic activity. That, in fact, you know, historically that's the case. If you go back and look at recessions since World War II, the steeper the recession, the more significant the subsequent recovery. But again, I don't think this is your father or grandfather's recession, so I don't think it'll be your father's or grandfather's recovery. But nonetheless, that's what the V-shaped folks are counting on.
And Dean Baker, what about a U-shaped business cycle?
Well, U-shape is a slower recovery. I think we might actually be looking at something even worse than that. But the distinction between the V-shape and U-shape, I mean, Mark's point about in the past, the steeper the recession, the steeper the recovery. The basic story of most recessions is that they've been brought on by the Fed raising rates to try and slow the economy, slow inflation. What that means is you raise rates, people stop buying cars, they stop buying houses. Then you have a simple remedy. You lower rates. Suddenly all the people who hadn't bought cars, hadn't bought houses, they rush out and buy cars, buy houses, and sends the economy booming. We can't see that story. Rates are as low as they could possibly be. So we're not going to see the Fed lower rates and then have this big housing and car buying boom. So we don't have the tools in place, the fuel in place for a V-shaped recovery.
You know, we'll stop with the alphabet now. I'd just like to ask our three experts, what kind of recovery do you think we're going to see, W, U, V, or something else? Mark Zandi, why don't you go first?
Well, I'm in the U camp. You know, Dean, I think, said very nicely, articulately, why V is going to be pretty tough. And I am more optimistic that we won't have a double dip, that we will get if we do need more help, policymakers will come through, and it will be sufficient. The economy's not going to come roaring back, but by 2011-12, I think we'll be engaged in making real progress in reducing unemployment.
Doug, what kind of recovery would you predict?
I'm pretty much a U camp as well. One of the things I think we need to remember is that, to a great extent, we've seen a remarkable tribute to how much the economy can recover on its own. If we went back, the conventional wisdom not long ago was, unless you get the toxic assets off the bank's books, unless you get the housing market fixed, we're not going to see anything improve. And, you know, we've weathered it despite the fact that we've solved neither of those problems, really. So this economy has tremendous resilience. We've seen the financial sector heal faster than I really thought was possible. That's the major drag on the economy, and it's going to be a slow recovery, but it's one that I don't expect to turn into a W.
And, Dean, what letter do you predict?
Well, I'd say U and possibly W, because we're going to be floating along with very little growth, which could very well turn negative in that story, which isn't that big a deal in the scheme of things. The underlying issue here is the unemployment rate and the idea that somehow things have turned out better. Let me just remind everyone, we're sitting back here looking at the stimulus package in January and February. The baseline prediction was that if we did nothing, no stimulus, that the unemployment rate would peak early next year at just around 9%. We're not a situation where it's 9.5% with stimulus, and we're all agreeing it's going to go much higher. So the economy is actually somewhat worse than we were all predicting, not better.
One of the questions I actually wanted to ask Mark while we had him on the phone is about his outlook for the housing market. What we have seen in the middle of this year is that there's evidence of housing starts picking up, and there's some people who believe that, you know, there's sort of the demographic demand for more houses that's just been overridden by the financial distress and the recession, and also that, you know, we may actually start to see housing prices rise. And we've seen some recent reports of housing prices no longer falling. So I was just curious if this was coming out. No, I know that. But, I mean, you're starting to hear chatter about recovery in residential housing, and Mark studied this more than anyone. I think that's a key to the shape of the recovery.
Well, I think the bottom in housing is certainly coming into view. I mean, sales and construction have hit bottom. House prices have firmed, but I think the key there is foreclosures. If foreclosures continue to rise, we're going to see more foreclosure sales later this year, and the house price declines will intensify. So the key really does depend on foreclosure mitigation and how well the Obama Mod plan works, and also, of course, the job market. Hopefully the job market improves and sticks to the script that we've laid out for it. So those are the two key things. But I mean, with a little bit of luck and some good policymaking, you know, I think by next spring, the house price declines will be fully over and the economy will start to gain traction.
I'm Susan Page, and you're listening to The Diane Rehm Show. Let's take another caller. We'll talk to Johnny, who's calling us from Speedway, Indiana. Johnny, where is Speedway?
It's real close to Indianapolis, about a mile from the racetrack.
It's a great dateline. I hope to go there someday. So, Johnny, did you have a question or a comment?
Well, I had a couple of questions, but I guess I'm only going to make a comment. We had an administration that was in for 8 years, and it basically just let everything just go down the drain. And then we have a guy who's trying to fix things. And it seems like everybody has an opinion, and they want to give him advice. They never did that with President Bush. I mean, everything he wanted, he got. But now we have Obama, and everybody wants to say, have an opinion. And if you talk to the average man on the street, who really isn't on the street anymore, he's in the food pantry line, he's like, look, give the man a chance. You know what I mean? Let him help us out.
All right. Thanks very much for your call, Johnny. Let me ask you, how much confidence do you think Americans have in President Obama in handling these terrible economic problems that we're seeing? Mark Zandi, why don't you start?
Well, I think they're giving them the benefit of the doubt. I think they're hopeful, and I think they will give the president and his policies a chance. Not too much of a chance, though. I mean, if we do get later this year and early next, and unemployment is still rising significantly and doesn't look like the job market's headed towards stabilization, then I think people are going to grow nervous and ask, well, what's next? But so far, I think they've been willing to give him some time.
Doug, just very briefly, you're a Republican. What do you think?
Well, I think the polls send a clear message, which is that the president remains very popular, although it's declining a little bit. But his policies never have been. They've always been a mixed bag in the eyes of the American public, and we'll see how it plays out.
Douglas Holtz-Aiken, Mark Zandi, and Dean Baker, thank you so much for being with us this hour on the Diane Rehm Show.
Thank you.
I'm Susan Page of USA Today, sitting in for Diane Rehm. Thanks for listening.
The Diane Rehm Show is produced by Sandra Pinkard, Nancy Robertson, Jonathan Smith, Susan Neighbors, and Denise Couture. The engineer is Andrew Chadwick. Dori Anisman answers the phones. Visit drshow.org for audio archives and CD sales, transcripts from SoftScribe, and podcasts. Call 202-885-1200 for more information. Our email address is drshow@wamu.org. This program comes to you from American University in Washington. This is NPR, National Public Radio.